Again, thanks, Brian, for inviting me to participate in your conference here. And I feel most honored and privileged to be on the session here with people like Secretary Vilsack. His presentation earlier this morning was very inspirational. I'm from the auto world, and I found it very inspirational, and I want to share that with you, that Vilsack had a lot of good points and a lot of points that really echo some of the things I'm going to share with you here this morning. With that, I'll go ahead and continue. This first slide here is really giving you Chrysler's perspective how we see we can meet customer needs with technology. We see at the center stage of any technology that we bring to market being the customer. We've got to always be looking at customer value. And I'll say that whether it be for vehicle technology, a new energy source, or a new fuel source, to us, that's all technology. And as you're looking at those technologies, how are you with that technology meeting the customer's wants and needs? So that's what why we put the customer in the center there. And then there's five pillars that surround that customer value, whether it be from offering a full line of product offerings, having the infrastructure in place by which to utilize that technology or that fuel or energy source, having the range appropriate for whether you live in an urban environment or in a rural environment and you have to do long distances, we want to make sure we have the proper range, and that means however you power or however you fill your vehicle. Customers' incentives as needed, especially if it's something new coming to the market, or competitive fuel costs. So all five of those play a key role in addressing the equation of how do we provide customer value. I want to just sort of have you focus on two boxes on this slide, and that's going to lead me into much of the rest of this presentation. If you look in the upper left-hand corner where it says advanced internal combustion powertrains, or if you may have heard the term ICEs, internal combustion engines, much of our nation is still powered by internal combustion engines. And that's because the primary fuel we use is gasoline and diesel. And so we are spending much of our time here at Chrysler trying to make our internal combustion engine as efficient as possible given our challenging fuel economy and greenhouse gas requirements. So the real question comes in, if you're talking that the gasoline and diesel are our primary fuel, how do you take it and make it better? How do you make gasoline better? You put some kind of enhancer in the fuel, and that enhancer is ethanol in the case of gasoline, or biodiesel in case of diesel. So that leads me into the rest of this discussion, and I will focus now on ethanol, of course. But we do see ethanol as an enhancer of fuel. It's been mentioned about octane. It's been mentioned about how it can help with emissions. Yes, ethanol can do these, and that needs to be understood and well communicated. So what's our interest in ethanol? There are three things listed here, and I'm going to add a fourth one that I inadvertently neglected to put here. The first one is, we've used a term in the auto industry, we want to move more metal. It's an old term that I've been in the auto industry a long time, and it was always about how do we move more metal. In this case, it's how do you sell more vehicles? And in the case of ethanol, how do you sell more ethanol-capable vehicles, FFVs, for instance. Another interest is we want to be able to offer value to the customers, exactly like we talked in the prior slide. We see if there is greater value seen in ethanol versus gasoline, the customer they'll buy the ethanol, and they'll buy the vehicle called an FFE. And it needs to be broadly available in the retail market. And that's another area that needs a little more work, of course. A third thing is we can obtain greenhouse gas credits and improve our ability to comply with challenging requirements. In the soon-to-be-published 2017 to 2025 new fuel economy and gas greenhouse gas rules that are going to be soon released by EPA, they are providing and have said they're going to provide the ability for us to get greenhouse gas credits for FFVs that we produce. Now, that's very important to us, because if we can get greenhouse gas credits, which we are being held to, by selling more FFVs, that's great. So it will either be in the rule itself or in subsequent guidance letters from EPA that fully define how we'll get those credits for FFVs. And the fourth thing that's not listed here in terms of our interest in ethanol, and I talked about it before, it can be an enhancer of fuel. In the case of ethanol, the biggest enhancer for us is octane. And as you increase the ethanol and you don't have the refiners take away that nice octane that can come with it, we can get better benefit and we can redesign our engines and downsize them. And that means running, designing engines, downsize engines with higher compression ratios so that we can improve efficiency. So we are very excited about that, but we also are realistic. We need with certainty a known date when there's going to be enough of that new mid-level blend fuel out there for us to start taking the investment to totally redesign our engines. That's not a small thing for us to do. Redesigning of engines and redesigning compression ratios in a broad way is a very expensive venture in the auto industry. So we need certainty that as the ethanol increases in percentage, the octane will be there, and we need assurance by whomever that it will be there. What will it take to continue to succeed with ethanol? Effective collaboration. Dave and the prior speaker also mentioned about our U.S. Ethanol conference we had in late July. Our potential to partner with ethanol industry is high, and in fact, we're not going to slow down. We've put some rather good notes from that meeting and how we can continue to collaborate together. And there's people from the Corn Growers Associations and from the ethanol industry and others that are quite willing to work with us as we continue to move the needle on effective collaboration. The other thing is strategic communication with customers and policymakers. I'm going to go into that a little more in detail here. And a plan to address the commercial drivers for ethanol. Throughout this presentation, I'm going to be focusing on a couple key things. One is communication, and another is the customer. You're going to hear that over and over again. And the third thing, I want to pick up on a term that Vilsack talked about. He used the term engage. Get engaged. Well, the auto industry is here today to say we want to engage with you. So get a part of this collaborative effort, and let's roll up our sleeves and figure out how we can make ethanol work here in the United States together. So I'll go into the commercial drivers for ethanol as we've seen it and as we've talked about it. There are five main drivers that we see. First, customers seek ethanol and ethanol-capable vehicles as a transportation fuel. So it's either the ethanol itself or the vehicles themselves as a transportation fuel. Manufacture and distribution of ethanol offer sustainable business proposition. Anywhere from the seed that you create to grow your crops with, all the way through the distribution and ultimately to the retailer, all of those people along that chain need to see that there's an opportunity to have a sustainable business. And if they have see that opportunity for sustainable business, they will, in fact, get on the wagon of saying ethanol is a viable business proposition for me. A third thing is ethanol provides low carbon alternative on a total life cycle basis in liquid fuels. Renewables, ethanol, they are all lower carbon based fuels. And I'll go into more detail in a little bit about this, but that gets back to the environment and how we control greenhouse gases and CO2. Policies and laws and regulations do not impose bias in transportation fuels. Today there is bias, and we'll talk a little more about that as well. And then the value of ethanol to customers and policy leaders has been effectively communicated. Coming back to this message about communicate the benefits of ethanol to the customers and to the people who are in the position of affecting law on things like RFS and other things. I like to always go back to Vilsack because he's got great lines always. And his thing was tell the story. Simple words, just three words, but that's what this communication is all about. You got to tell the story to the customer, and you got to tell the story to the decision makers in Washington. Those are the places we got to communicate. So, sustainable business proposition. Because the sustainable business proposition we're talking about for manufacturing and the distribution of ethanol, offering that sustainable position, is not really us in the auto industry. This is sort of upstream of us. So we've just put down a few points here as to our thoughts on this, but really, the ethanol industry and the corn growers, this is your page. This is what you've got to see and make happen. So one of the things that we talk about, and even before I say some comments on this first RFS, there was a comment made right at the beginning of your morning session here about this not being the time to open up RFS. We're fully in support of that at Chrysler. We say, you got too much fire coming at you right now. This is not the time to talk about RFS and let people start inventing how to take the legs out under an RFS. So, but looking forward a little bit, as you say, down the road a little bit, you know, right now we've been having just a thing that says we got volumes. But if you look in the 2016 timeframe and forward in RFS, there's regulatory requirements that says that EPA reduces the requirement on any of the four major categories under RFS by 20% or more for two consecutive years, they are required to permanently reduce that bucket. And I don't know how many people are aware of that in the law, but that's an important thing to be looking a little bit forward down the road is what are we going to be doing about RFS down the road? And that's 2016 and forward. If there's adjustments up to 2016, like there has been on cellulosic ethanol, that will not be something that has necessarily a permanent adjustment. But 2016 and forward, there can be permanent adjustments, and that's something that this community should be very concerned about. Another thing that will help in this area is identifying the value proposition for each entity of the supply chain. I sort of alluded to that before, from the very feedstock producer to the retailer. And broaden the availability of ethanol blends beyond E10 and in multiple ways. For example, blender pump expansion and advancement. And that's an area that was talked and some of the presenters already this morning. I will say one thing, and I'll just divert for a minute here. During Vilsack's Q&A session, there was a question that was asked of somebody over here about what are they doing to, I mean, it was a question about cellulosic ethanol, and what's the government doing to advance and the commercialization of cellulosic ethanol? Something that most of you may not know in the audience, Chrysler has been working with a company called Zeachem, which is doing some development of cellulosic ethanol from woody biomass out in the Northwest. And when Vilsack mentioned those eight facilities around the country, one of those eight facilities is this one with Zeachem in Northwest United States and Oregon. So we're very much into cellulosic ethanol, and we see that as a good future. And although we don't have a financial agreement with Zeachem, we are, in fact, working closely with them, and we're on the board. There's a board for this AFRI grant that was given from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and my director, Reg Modlin, is on that board, so we're very active in trying to continue to move the needle forward with cellulosic ethanol. Ethanol is a low-carbon alternative, and that being on a total life cycle basis and in liquid fuels. Carbon in the fuel goes in the tank and out the tailpipe. And since we're being held accountable to how much CO2 is going out the tailpipe in the greenhouse gas standards, we have to be very smart on how to deal with the carbon throughout, not just in the vehicle, but what's put in the vehicle in terms of the fuel. So if we put more carbon in, it's going to go out the tailpipe and in the form of CO2, and that's a thing that we're being held accountable to. There's a goal to reduce 80% reduction in greenhouse gases from transportation, and that demands that carbon be reduced or removed from all phases of the life cycle. With those kind of targets, and that's clearly what's being talked about either in California with its ARB or federally with EPA, we have to have every possibility by which to manage carbon. Without considering electric vehicles or fuel cell vehicles, the vehicle, or as what we like to call the efficiency processor, can only do so much. If you take a look at the way the regulations are being written, with a 54.5 mile per gallon requirement across the board by 2025, it really points to becoming more EVs or more FECVs. However, in the interim, maybe within the next 20 years, because liquid fuels are going to be around for a while, they're dominating the market, and they're going to continue to dominate the market. Much can be accomplished with low carbon liquid alternatives. For example, ethanol. And we need to communicate that value to policymakers and in an appropriate strategic way. So an effective communication strategy, the value of ethanol to customers and policy leaders has been effectively communicated. That's what we want to strive for. And the way to do that is that we just went through four major drivers. We need to take the essential messages of those four commercial drivers and develop a way to communicate them. We need to communicate message to customers and maybe targeted messages to customers, investors, fuel producers, fuel retailers, and policymakers on the value of ethanol. So in our view is, what will success look like if we've done a proper job of communicating? Customers will regularly choose ethanol, like they do in Brazil. Policymakers are leading the support for ethanol, and making and distributing and selling ethanol is profitable. Sort of a summary and talking about ongoing collaboration. Why ethanol, we think, continues to make sense. Although ethanol faces many challenges, it still offers consumers a good value proposition. It enhances national energy security and diversification, and you heard that in a big way from Vilsack again. It creates jobs across America because you're able to, and I liked what he said also about being able to sell and or produce and sell product locally. That's a real good way to make jobs in the communities around the United States. It offers low carbon content and less greenhouse gas emissions on a total life cycle effect. And it offers the most expedient and least expensive means to lessen CO2 for liquid fuels. I'm sure you all recognize it's a lot more expensive to make an electric vehicle or a hydrogen vehicle. And there's a lot we can do inexpensively with liquids and low carbon alternatives. Another thing that I could add to this one is the one I mentioned before about how ethanol can be an enhancer of fuel for octane. I would add that as one other additional bullet at the last page here. Ongoing collaboration, continue the ethanol and auto teamwork, and seek other like-minded entities to further develop and deliver the right messages to policymakers.